This is part 3 of 3 of Nick Motzke discussing the expert witness testimony of Barbara Forrest. This was recorded on October 5th, 2005 by the National Center for Science Education.
So really the whole movement is closely tied to pandas. However, Barbara Forrest also went into the later history, and much of this is reviewed in her book, Creationism's Trojan Horse, so I won't go into it in incredible detail. But she went through various histories of the movement written by the proponents themselves, Paul Nelson, Philip Johnson, Mark Hartwig, and many of the early versions, you know, things written in the mid-1990s, were not at all shy about referring to what we now call intelligent design proponents as creationists, straight up people writing about themselves. And this was because while the term intelligent design gained currency in that book, Pandas of People, it took a while, basically, for the creationists to completely switch over to the terms intelligent design. And it's only been maybe in the last 5 years where they have insisted that they're not creationists and really expunged that language completely from their works. It took quite a while for that change to thoroughly occur. So a number of those sorts of examples were cited. Barbara Forrest then, sort of the crowning part of the testimony, was the actual wedge document. Barbara Forrest put up the actual scan of the original wedge document, which is a graphical version. It's much different than the one that's on the web. The text is the same. The web version of the wedge document is just plain text. But the actual wedge document is a formatted document with a bunch of graphics. It's got the old Discovery Institute banner on the front, and it's got a large triangle representing a wedge. And so it's quite striking to look at that, because, you know, various things are emphasized. Certain key phrases that people like to quote are actually blown up and quoted, you know, in inserts in the text between the columns. So it's quite striking to look at. And, you know, the wedge document is well known. Just go to the internet and type wedge document. But some of the things that I didn't notice before that were interesting. One is that the wedge was intended to cut down a tree, and the tree was evolution and materialism. And the idea is that Philip Johnson said you can insert the thin end of the wedge, which is an attack on evolution, and then you can drive that wedge in further, and you can split apart the entire tree, and then you end up with, you know, reforming culture, bringing the culture back to God and conservative religion, etc., etc. And what's interesting is that this really parallels a piece of creationist iconography. This was not mentioned in trial. I'm just pointing this out. If you look at young earth creationist works, they often have an icon called the Tree of Evil. This appears on the cover of various books or as cartoons. And the basic idea is that the root of the tree is evolution, which they would call a philosophy. And from this evil root or evil trunk springs all the societal evils. Things like pornography and crime and Marxism and Nazism and, you know, the liberal agenda and all kinds of bad things. And the idea behind attacking evolution is that if you can kill evolution, you can kill the rest of this. Whether or not that's at all realistic as a political or historical matter is highly debatable, but creationists are not known for... how should we put it? They're not known for being entirely practical. This is more of an ideology, and wishful thinking is endemic in all aspects, not just the scientific aspects of creationism. But this is incredible, this tree of evil metaphor, where you can attack the base and you can solve the societal evils, is present in young earth creationist literature everywhere. And the wedge document, that's really the central metaphor, which I think people may not realize. People focus on the wedge, but what is the wedge going after? It's going after this tree, and it's explicitly described as a tree. So that was one thing I found interesting. The other thing that was interesting that was highlighted was that the wedge document refers several times to legal efforts to help school boards and state legislatures who want to implement policies requiring intelligent design. And this is very revealing because, of course, now the Discovery Institute says that they do not favor that kind of policy. They don't want intelligent design required. But right there in the wedge document, they said not only we hope it is required, but we offer legal help to those who attempt this because they knew there would be legal challenges. So I think that was interesting. Now, one question is, why focus on the Discovery Institute so much? Because, you know, they're not directly involved in the case. Several of their experts have withdrawn themselves from the case. And the Dover School Board used PANDAS, which is produced by FTE and not the Discovery Institute. There's two reasons. One is that this Discovery Institute really represents what intelligent design is today. Almost all of the authors of PANDAS are fellows of the Discovery Institute. I think everyone except Percival Davis. And the other thing that's important to realize is that Discovery Institute materials is sort of inspired the Dover Area School Board. Sometime in 2003, I believe, they got a hold of the Icons of Evolution videotape, which is based on Jonathan Wells' book, Icons of Evolution. And according to testimony the previous week, this video was shown to teachers, apparently whether they liked it or not, and this was used as one of the many encouragements to attempt to get the teachers to be balanced and teach both evolution and creationism. So this and probably some other materials were some of the instigators of the Dover Area School District's actions. So there's one reason to be interested. And of course the other reason is that several of the witnesses that are going to testify for the defense are members of the Discovery Institute in terms of being fellows. And the Discovery Institute really represents what intelligent design is and what the goals of it are and what it means for their strategy. If they succeed, for example, in the courts, or they succeed politically attempting to get politicians to pass their view. So there were many other various documents that were raised, and a lot of Barbara Forrest's testimony consisted of reading passages into the record. Early on, the defense was objecting a lot, calling these documents hearsay, but these were typically overruled, and eventually I think they got tired of doing this, and basically Barbara Forrest was allowed to testify undisturbed. She went for the second morning session and the first afternoon session, then we took a break, and the cross-examination began in the afternoon, and frankly, I did not think that was very effective either. It's going to continue tomorrow, so I'll comment more fully on that tomorrow when it continues in the morning. Some of the basic points seem to be attempting to say that Barbara Forrest was biased because she's a member of the New Orleans Secular Humanist Association, that she's inconsistent because she points out religious connections between intelligent design and religious views, but she doesn't consider the same thing important between, for example, Richard Dawkins and atheism, or between herself and atheism. And I think the central distinction is that with evolution does not rely on Richard Dawkins. Evolution relies on a vast body of published literature, peer-reviewed literature in the journals that is almost entirely purely professional. Data, arguments, tests, statistics, etc., very dry. And you can dig through that literature for a long time. You will occasionally find what you would call non-scientific statements, but just like any science, by and large, this is all very dry, very factual material. And that's really what supports the science of evolution. This is what Michael Ruse would call the professional evolution. What critics tend to focus on is popular evolution, where you do get sometimes scientists, sometimes popularizers writing popular books, scientists writing popular books, and sometimes these people do mix their religion, their views on religion, with their science. And just like Kenneth Miller said back on day one of this trial, just because a scientist says something doesn't make it science. So I think that's the important distinction between what Barbara Forrest was doing with intelligent design and what she's doing with evolution. I forgot to mention, of course, with intelligent design, there is essentially no purely scientific work. Everything they do, everything they argue for with intelligent design is either quite explicitly religious, where they clearly say this is some kind of religious program, this is an effort to get God back into schools, or this is an effort to a Christian apologetics effort. Many of their essays are just clearly explicit about that. Or even in their theoretically scientific works, they always involve some kind of assumptions about the intelligent designer, even if unstated. And so even this by itself is clearly going to involve views on the supernatural, expectations of how the supernatural would act. And it's very difficult to call this kind of thing science unless you have some real reason to expect that the supernatural actor is going to act one way or the other. The supernatural by itself, unexplained, is an unconstrained hypothesis. And in science, if something is unconstrained, there's no way to test it. And that's the primary difficulty with these intelligent design arguments. So I'm editorializing a little bit there, and I've gone on for long enough. We will continue with the cross-examination tomorrow. I may not get this out till Friday because I have to leave town in the afternoon tomorrow. I have to go to a wedding and actually get away from Harrisburg for a few days. But I will attempt to do a bit of a blog then. So thank you very much for listening. I hope it wasn't too dull. And feel free to check for updates on NCSC's website. And I will sign off. See you next time.